This last section is about the function of music. Music has so many different functions. It's such an intertwined part of our lives that we can't even begin to notice all the ways, because it's so seeped into our lives. I mean, imagine going to a movie that had no sound. I mean, at one time, that was reality. Silent movies were the thing, you know, even in the 20s. And now, you know, to watch a movie without sound is a very bizarre experience. And, you know, unless you're watching one of those old movies. You know, music is so entrenched in everything we do. But a lot of the times when you play music, it's for a certain effect. And let me just say, you know, as a pro musician myself, there are concerts where people are going to only listen to you and do nothing else except listen. And that's a very rewarding experience. But most of the time, most of the gigs I do, I guess I'm not a quote-unquote concert guitarist. I would say probably 95% or more of the gigs I do are for a function, like a wedding, for example. You know, I go and play. Let's say I'm booked the whole day. I'm going to do the ceremony. No, the entrance music, the ceremony, the cocktail hour, and then my band's going to show up and I'm going to play the reception. All right. Every single one of those is a function. When I show up and people are showing up at the, I mean, when I'm playing and people are showing up for the ceremony, it's background music. When I'm doing the songs during the ceremony, there may not be any other talking, but people aren't just there for the music. It's serving the function, as you well know. And then, you know, obviously the cocktail hour, people are having fun and I'm playing in the background. They might be singing along. I'm not saying this, that they're not listening. I'm not saying that it doesn't have a profound influence on their day. It does. And this is why, you know, wedding bands make good money, because it's no small detail to the bride and groom and to the whole family. I mean, certainly maybe you've gone to weddings where the band was terrible and your ability to enjoy that wedding was severely compromised, or vice versa. You know, it was very, very great band and you loved it, you know. So 95% of the time of the gigs that I do, and I would have to say that, you know, almost all the musicians that I know, I suppose it's, you know, local versus national musicians. When you become a national musician, like Mike Stern, like I was saying before, who tours the world, you know, that's a concert musician. Most local musicians do function gigs. You know, I go and play at a restaurant. Now, it's true that maybe some patrons are listening very closely to what I'm playing and enjoying it. And certainly I have people come up and thank me all the time. Or they throw eggs. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm a vegan, so they throw tofu. No, but anyway. You know, it profoundly affects their lives, but it's not a concert environment. And I bring this up because it's part of thinking about how music influences your life and how it makes it better. For, like I was saying before about playing Happy Birthday for someone, you know, that's a function. They're not going to listen to how well did you play every note and how perfect did you do it and blah, blah, blah. And that's why I bring this up, because the music serves, it enhances our lives so much. So no one's going to say, you know, that you just played Happy Birthday for with all sincerity, that, you know, oh, you messed up, you played, you know, the third bar wrong, that, you know, that would just be so stupid of them to do that. And so I invite you to consider all the ways that your music enhances your life. I invite you to consider taking a long-range view of where you want to go with your music and enjoying the present moment of where you're at, maybe getting some kind of affirmation or reading some of the books that I recommended, like The Law of Attraction or The Power of Now or Kenny Werner's Effortless Mastery. And then the other book I didn't really talk about was The Perfect Wrong Note. I don't have the author's name right in front of me. It's about the process of learning music. It basically says that when you are learning a new piece of music and there's one spot that gives you trouble, you zero right in on that spot and nothing else. And you sort just that. And if you zero in small enough, then the actual thing that's hanging you up and messing you up is very doable in that range. And this applies to music lessons as a whole. The job of a teacher, obviously, is to break everything down into very small pieces. And so if a student is struggling with a certain issue, it's highly likely that the raw elements of that which they're struggling with can be broken down into very, very simple steps. Now, of course, it may be true that the student is struggling with more than one element at the same time, but that student doesn't know what the elements are. It's my job to break them down and to determine the order in which they should be taught, you know. So these are all things that happen in the background. The reason I'm bringing it up to you is if your focus is small enough with the guide of with the help of a teacher, you can go right to the very thing, the very exact thing that you're struggling with for that particular tune or that particular piece or that particular technique. And then the steps are very doable because they're so small. I don't know if I'm making sense here, but there's a quote from Mark Twain. It says something like, if something seems overwhelming, maybe one of you can find this on the internet and tell me what the real quote is. But it says, if something is overwhelming, it simply means that you haven't broken it down into small, the steps haven't been broken down into small enough steps to be able to be done very easily and quickly. And this is what a teacher does for you. And this isn't me trying to toot my own horn or to promote, you know, taking lessons or anything like that. I'm just putting it into context. It's my job to break things down and to make them easy. Otherwise, because when you're on your own and you don't have playing experience, you're just not sure where the problem is, and you don't even know, it could be multiple problems all at the same time, you know. So it's my job to break them all down and to work them out. And because I've been able to do this on my own, you know, and become a great player after 38 years, you're able to see the process at work, because the process doesn't change. The process is going in deeper and focusing only on that one thing at a time that you should be working on. This is another problem with more advanced students. They want to work on multiple things at the same time, and I'm constantly saying, you know, look, you're working on X, Y, and Z all at the same time. Let's just break them down and do them all separately. This is why you're struggling. You can't do three things at once. You can only do one thing at once. I used to have the worst multitasking problem. I used to think that I could do three things at once. That was when I was in my 20s, and I, needless to say, made a lot of mistakes when I was in my 20s, and that was one of them. That was a major cause of it. And then only gradually was I forced to admit, or at least, you know, think that I admitted to myself that I could only do two things at once. And then finally, at the age of 46, I realized that I can only do one thing at once, and sometimes I'm not even sure I could do that. No, but I'm just kidding. And so the process is the same. You know, you break things down into their raw elements, and you only focus on one thing at a time. Therefore, you make things doable and easy and fun, not overwhelming. So if there's ever a time where you're getting overwhelmed, most definitely it means that you're focusing on too many things at once. Okay. I read a book recently that was saying about the feeling of overwhelmment in general in life, and they said that it's generally you're getting out of your own business. You're not minding your own business. You're either minding other people's business or you're minding God's business, meaning that, you know, you're trying to control an outcome, whereas all you can really do is set the intention to do something and do the actions necessary, but you can't control how it's going to come out. And if you're getting upset or hung up, like we were talking about, then you're minding God's business. Or you're trying to control someone else, like you're trying to control your child or your parent or your coworker or your friend or your brother, sister, etc., into doing or saying whatever you want them to do or say. And then you're getting bent out of shape when they don't live up to your expectations. You know, so that's an example. And so the book was simply saying, do what you're going to do and let go of the rest. And this ties it all the way back to how I began the book of talking about the spiritual masters and how they said, be in the present moment, but set your intention at the same time. All right. One of the sources I didn't mention here was Mark Allen. And his name is M-A-R-C A-L-L-E-N. He has a lot of great stuff because he's like a spiritual millionaire guy. He's someone who has achieved great earthly success, but he'll be the first to tell you that earthly success is not necessary for for enjoying yourself as a human being. In fact, he even says, some of you, I wish you became a millionaire just so you could see the truth of my words, that you don't need to become a millionaire in order to be, do, and have everything you want in life. And so he's someone to check out as well. And I hope you've enjoyed this rambling session. I feel like I'm totally all over the place. I welcome your feedback on this. I welcome your ideas. I hope it's helpful in your enjoyment of where you're at musically and your enjoyment of the process of taking you where you want to go. And it's a privilege and an honor for me to be your teacher. Thank you so much, and enjoy.